This evening I'd like to talk about meditation. It seems relevant somehow. Maybe. Part of the reason for this is a series of, last week we were looking at ethics, and next week we'll look at the wisdom. And these are the three, sort of three areas of the Eightfold Path that that the Buddha taught. And that we can fruitfully, you know, look into what he was saying about these practices if we're interested in the end of suffering. So if we're interested in finding out what it might be like to live without unnecessary stress and suffering, and for our own benefit and for the benefit of others. So this is something I always feel worth reconnecting with, you know, on a daily basis, or if not on an hourly basis. And it's one of the things I want to talk about in this talk, about kind of, on the one hand, looking at our maybe sitting meditation practice, perhaps using this evening as a little bit of a reflective space for looking at kind of, well, what do we do when we're on the cushion? You know, sometimes I think can be quite helpful, especially if you've been doing it for a little while. It's like, but even if you're quite new to it as well, I think, well, you know, there's so many different ways of practicing, and this insight meditation tradition tends to be quite eclectic, and it can be a bit confusing. And we're asked to take a lot of responsibility in a way, in terms of choosing and discerning, in a way, what's helpful, what's skillful. I think it takes a lot of patience, a lot of perseverance, and just a lot of questioning and exploration, just that, you know, what is it that's helpful? So I'd really like to invite you to, just as much as you would like, kind of let this be an opportunity. So what do I do when I'm on the cushion, actually? Is that, how is that? You know, is it working, and what does that mean? And what do I feel that makes sense to me? So kind of what's missing, or what might be helpful? Just, you see, it's that sort of area, and it isn't something that anybody else can really tell you. But, you know, it's like opening that up, and sometimes a teacher or friend or whatever can sort of point to certain things. But the three particular points that the Buddha points to in the Eightfold Noble Path, I'll mention these a little bit about each three, is that we can really use these as a reflective kind of, if you like, framework, where it's like, okay, so effort, we're going to talk about right effort, and then mindfulness, right mindfulness, and then right, a little bit about right concentration, these three key parts of any meditation practice, isn't it? So any tradition, any sort of any technique, in a way, there's going to be the need for reflecting on these three sort of very key aspects of that, to see how are they balanced in our practice? Are we're really into mindfulness, but our concentration is like zero or minus three, you know, or we're really concentrated, but we keep bumping into the furniture, you know, so maybe a bit more mindfulness might be helpful, you know, or our effort is all over the place, and we're trying really, really hard, and then we just give up and say, oh, forget it, I can't be bothered, it's too hard. Or we're trying really, really hard, and all we're getting in our meditation is a big headache. So, you know, effort, very, very important. And of course, you can see how it's in our life as well. So you could also use, you could say, well, actually, Anna, you think about my work situation. Right effort. That could be very, very helpful, interesting inquiry. Like, take this and think, you know, where are the places, the people, the particular tasks, etc., etc., where we start pushing, you know, or we just go, oh, forget it, I'll leave that, I'll do it next week. Oh. So we can bring awareness to kind of where the pressure can come in, or where we get a bit loose and, oh, well, never mind, you know, or someone else can do it. But we can really see, probably you see this, our life in microcosm on the cushion or on the chair, on the bench. So this is one of the wonders of meditation, I think, is that you get to see you get to see a lot, you know, you get to see your patterns and your tendencies and the possibility then of being able to work skillfully with that at the place where it all begins, which is in the mind. So we can begin to participate and explore and see, well, what actually is helpful? Because we might have various ideas about meditation or how we should be or what effort looks like. And actually, we're just, if you look at the results and the effects, you know, it's just not helpful. And we have some idea that we've got to work hard and really, you know, and all this, I'm right, you know, And again, what's the result of that? Sometimes that's really good. We need that kind of strong effort and that very clear and like, right, go for it. But sometimes we need what I might call a more soft effort, you know, which is actually a lot about like the spaciousness in that meditation that I was just doing. Sometimes that effort to connect or tune into a sense of spaciousness. And what kind of effort does that take? The effort to sort of just relax a little bit, relax the body, kind of like stop sort of feeling like, you know, that sense of some, almost somebody behind you or someone on your shoulder going, come on, you know, get the way, come on, oh, like, is it possible to actually have very vigorous, very alive practice, completely free from any form of aggression, isn't it? Or, you know, some form of that. So it's a real question, because, you know, some of us maybe have more a tendency to the other sort of, we're a bit too relaxed, or we tend to be a bit too sort of, well, you know, we'll just see what happens, go with the flow. It is, it's great to go with the flow sometimes, but does that really work as a sort of, you know, as a philosophy of life and meditation? I mean, I don't know, maybe someone could argue that with me, but it's not really a philosophical thing. It's like, okay, look, you know, because some of the deficit there might be sometimes we, you know, that actually we need to be a bit more precise. What's really happening? So many ways in which, you know, we can look at effort. The Buddha sometimes talked about, you know, not too tight, not too loose. Like tightening the string on a musical instrument. If it's too tight, it goes boing, you know. If it's too loose, you don't get any sound out of it. So this is a very helpful image, I think. Like, what would that be if we apply it to our effort? Right, yeah. I think, again, we have to get a feel for what that is in our own system. Because, you know, I could say something like, just have your attention as if it's like a feather, and you're just touching the breathing, you just touch the thought. And for somebody, you know, that is just too light. It's like you can't find anything. It's like you need something stronger, like what would another image be of sort of really holding something? Like you hold your, you know, you need attention which is kind of like that. It's stronger, it's like holding something. I press that button again. Oh, sorry, I've just had a moment. Worried it's not. No, I think it is. So different kind of qualities of attention. I wanted to read you a bit about what the Buddha said about right effort. I wasn't sure whether I should because it's a bit where you can hear it. He says, "And what friends is right effort?" He says, "Here a bhikkhu awakens zeal for the non-arising of an unarisen, unwholesome state. And he makes effort, or she, arouses energy, exerts his or her mind and strives." It's like, whoa. And it's really interesting because I think that in the Western mind, you know, it's like, what's our relationship to that? I mean, I don't know what it was like at the time of the Buddha, but was it a bit like, were they a bit laid back? So he had to really emphasize this sort of, right, go for it, strive, burn, you know, and you have to look at your own, yourself and your own sort of culture and your own, it's like, does that, maybe sometimes that's really helpful. But if you look, if you listen, what he's actually saying is saying about, he's, there's four kinds of effort. Okay, the non-arising of unhelpful states. So this is a very interesting one. So the effort it takes to, you could say, abide in that place where there's no unskillful or unhelpful state of mind, you know, like whatever that might be, anger or lust or wanting or, you know, irritation, anything. And how, what effort does it take to actually take care of that? Like, not hang on to it and hold on to it and keep it, but like, kind of, like, what lifestyle, what choices from moment to moment are kind of actually, you know, help us to abide in a, you could say, in a state which is wholesome. So this is the kind of striving or effort, exertion that it takes for the continuance, the non-disappearance, the strengthening increase and fulfillment by development of wholesome states. You know, so that's quite, isn't it? You know, it's like, I always like to think about there's nothing to do. But what, again, you know, it's again, what is that kind of effort? What is that effort which is, like, there's maybe a wholesome state, you know, there's some mindfulness, for example, or a bit of steadiness, or calm, or kindness, or, you know, many, many different kinds. And you can actually, it's almost like we don't realize the importance of actually knowing that, actually knowing and sort of both to kind of appreciate it and kind of embody that while it's there, but also to understand again, how does that arise? Like, what does it actually take? What does help the mind to settle? Now, that, you see, it's like that's something we can really learn and we can know, and it can be a skillfulness that we can draw on. Not that we can determine or control or sort of, you know, always design a perfect mind state for ourselves, but that we're ready with this right effort to respond, to be receptive and responsive to however we are. Like a learning, you know, how do you work with the anxious mind, and how do you work with that? So we have the, yeah, what it takes to abandon the unwholesome states, and again, it's like it does need some sort of faith and like that this is possible. Chanda, this word that's translated here as zeal, also means a kind of wholesome desire, like, which I think is really important, like this sort of recognition is really possible for our mind to be free of these, you know, unhelpful stuff and mind states that, you know, it all happens for all of us. But again, can we, that relationship of being able to see it more moving through the sky like clouds, I mean, that image may not work for you, but like what kinds of, we can use our imagination, our creativity, you know, to see what helps stuff to pass. that actually it's like the faith that we can actually participate. We cannot determine, but we can actually participate. Maybe that's the key thing about effort, and that sometimes that means being very strong and saying, no, you know, I am not going to think about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's one sutta where the Buddha talks about dealing with thoughts, and one of them is you crush mind with mind. You know, it's like, so sometimes there is this very strong effort, you know, that if I dwell on that, it's not going anywhere good. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go and walk the dog. I'm going to ring somebody up. I'm going to do my metta practice. It's like, brr. And that, can you feel like that is not out of aggression? That's different, isn't it? That quality that I'm trying to communicate. It's a kind of, yes, it's kind of got strength in it. It's a sense of determination. It's not aggressive. That's kind of, I think that's a really important difference, because I think you do need sometimes that quality of strength. And sometimes maybe it's very light. You know, we can feel like, you know, sometimes you just, something goes through your mind like a thought, and you can let it just go. You know, it's like one of those thoughts that you could really get into, and the big story about her and me and them and how it's not going to, and oh dear. Actually, you can realise sometimes it's that, in a way, the effort required is just very, very, very slight. It's more like non-doing. It's more like just letting it go. And maybe sometimes when the meditation gets quieter, it's that quiet effort, that sort of soft, what we might call soft effort, which is more about, okay, leave it alone, just observe, it's okay, you know, don't need to do anything. You know, because we have such a strong tendency, don't we, to jump in there and, right, sort this out, analyse this, you know, right, that's what I'm going to say, and right. But to be able to actually let that arise and pass may be the most powerful and the most healing thing for that situation. You know, even if, you know, some action then can arise maybe from a more wholesome place. So you get the idea. We have zeal for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. That's the fourth one. So, coming here, for example, there definitely arises wholesome states in me. I don't know about you. I mean, it's not all, you know, it's not all love, peace and joy. I'm not saying that. But basically, to kind of come together with other people and practice and feel, I don't know, if there's a lot of goodness in that. It's a lot to tune into, both in terms of other people and the companionship and, yeah, just the support and, I don't know, you know, the sense of, yeah, I made it, I came this evening. That's great, you know, yeah. So, just what is it that helps the unarisen wholesome states to arise? You know, and again, this is so, it's like, the things, the places, the, you know, the more external stuff, you could say, and then the internal, the way we're paying attention to our stuff. So this is wise attention. This is wise attention. What is worth paying attention to, and how? So that emotion or mind state or that body sensation, what actually helps that? So this is all within the realm of right effort and right mindfulness. There's a lot more, I've heard a lot more, I have to move on here a bit. I wanted to read you something by a wonderful teacher many of you are very devoted to, Tanisaro, who's an American monk. And he said something about this, which I know some of you may have heard me say this before, but I find it very powerful. The most skillful way of dealing with the present, sorry, start again. The most skillful way of dealing with the present is to drop all levels of participation that cause even the slightest bit of stress in the mind. I mean, maybe that doesn't float your boat, but to me that is such a beautiful concise expression of the path, the whole path in a way, what would it be to bring that to our life, you know, to every moment on the cushion? What would it be to participate in a really difficult conversation with somebody with a commitment, with an intention to participate, to drop any kind of participation that is increasing the amount of stress in that situation? I don't know if you can hear that. That is so, to me, that's so much in that. So, it's so radical, it's so practical. It's the point of transformation. It's like the point of that shift from suffering to not suffering. Also, a quotation I love, which seems relevant here to do with this relationship with the difficult, that the great American Zen teacher Reb Anderson said, "Not meddling with the world of suffering is freedom from the world of suffering." I love that. So Zen. Not meddling with the world of suffering is freedom from the world of suffering. So, sorry, yeah?
I don't know what is meddling.
Oh, meddling means fiddling about with, interfering with, trying to fix. Yeah, thank you. Thanks. So something about the power of this mindfulness, which is the second, which is really, I mean, this right effort and right mindfulness are really like this. They're not really separate, are they? Because all of what we've been talking about is really mindfulness. So right effort is really that taking place, is that the cultivation of attention within a particular sphere, a framework or a context. So body, feelings, mind. So that's where we're developing a wise attention. But this being able to be present with some experience in this very clean, non-reactive, observing, okay, here we're into mindfulness, sort of understanding different ways of understanding mindfulness. It has many different facets, but this ability to bear something in mind, to be alert, receptive, equanimous, present with mind, sensations, thoughts. It's like this. That's another way of that basic clarity. It's like that, can you have that moment, like right now, so you're hearing my voice, but like there's that basic clarity, just knowing. It's very, it's like we overlook that, we jump over that. We kind of get busy thinking and figuring out. It's like, but just kind of nurturing that trusting more, that actual, just that bare capacity to know. Because we are always going to be imperfect, at least this is my opinion. I mean, maybe that's a bit of a statement, but if we can't, there is cultivation, there is need for development, we could say, but this is the paradox, that it only really comes through fully being able to be with this now. So it's like you can't get round that. You've got to go through that. So awareness that arises from paying attention in a non-judgmental way. I'm just saying a number of different ways of understanding it, so you pick up on whatever feels most helpful. And I just want to read you some wonderful similes that the Buddha used for the different, kind of saying what mindfulness is like. So one is climbing a high tower. Climbing a high tower, being able to look. So that sense of being able to actually really look at or, you know, observe our experience. So helpful. You know, the difference between that and being just in it. Taming a wild elephant. So mindfulness. I don't know if anybody ever feels like a wild elephant, or that their mind is like a wild elephant, stomping along and very destructive. I know that one. This is interesting. The diagnostic probe of a surgeon. That's an interesting one, isn't it? That mindfulness can be very, very fine. So even in the subtlest kinds of meditation, you know, it can get very, 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 very subtle, very, very... But mindfulness can be there. It can come, and it can come very, very close, and very, be very detailed to see what's needed. A watchful cowherder. I kind of like that. I like always so. Watchful cowherder. It's interesting. You know, sometimes I like this. You're just the cow. The thoughts are kind of, you know, wandering around. It's okay, you know, kind of got your eye on them. So if they start to get out of hand, or, you know, wander off anywhere dangerous, then you can kind of, you know. So it's just and sort of maybe that way we can sort of gently herd our thoughts in sort of helpful directions. Like, try over here. The grass is good over here. Anyway, you get the idea. A skillful charioteer. So again, that's some sense that we are sort of learning to steer in a particular direction. So knowing, again, sometimes a very maybe big movements, big change of direction, or sometimes very subtle. Anyway, so as you can see, it's a very, very rich sort of reflection for us. Like maybe if we're reflecting on our own practice, you think, well, yeah, maybe you relate more to one than another. You know, I'm good at sort of looking at things and observing. But the diagnostic bit, do I don't always go very close and really, you know, really look closely? But anyway. So lastly, I just want to say a little bit about concentration, right concentration. So really, this quality of gathered, steadied, unified mind, body coming together, in this steadied, stable mind, stabilized, and it has a lot of different qualities to it. It happens naturally when we practice right effort and right mindfulness. So, you know, it's kind of like that's a natural product of that. So in a way we can sort of know that one of the ways we can know our meditation is working, if you like, is that some of that is growing. It can be very. It can go into extremely refined sort of states of consciousness, and very deep, very pleasant, extremely pleasant states of consciousness. And I won't go into all of those right now, the jhanas. But I did want to mention five jhana factors, which are these factors of mind that happen, that are kind of the qualities of mind that are really helpful and wholesome, that are developed through developing concentration, through this sort of this focusing, this coming back, this steadying around a particular object such as the breath or the body. And the first two are vitakka and vichara, these Pali words, which really mean the ability to place the attention in a particular way or particular place. And then the vichara, which is both the coming back and also being able to actually explore what's there. And so sometimes it feels like this is in itself such a just that first movement, if you like, of those two qualities of being able to come to the body, the mind, the breathing, and actually stay, then come back and then stay a bit longer. And in the staying, it's like a vichara has this exploring kind of aspect to it, that we are actually, again, this receptivity, that we're trying to sort of notice what's going on, understand, open to what's going on, not just sort of be there. I know I'm running out of time this. Anyway, I'll just mention these other three. The other two, piti and sukha, are kind of a sense of ease or pleasantness that arises through the meditation. This is so important because we won't continue to meditate if it's not pleasant, if it's just, you know, hammering away at dukkha. And this is very hard to sustain over the longer term. And so to actually realize there are ways of inclining towards what a sense of ease or pleasantness in the body and the mind that arises when we keep coming back and we're steadying the mind, there is actually just naturally this pleasantness arises in the body and in the mind, and it can feel many, many different ways. But it's really important to notice it and be kind of willing to notice it, or know that that can be there and it's okay and it's part of your meditation. It's actually skillful to notice that, because that will really nourish, it will really nourish and kind of encourage you in your meditation and help the meditation to become a place of healing, a place where you actually like to be, a place where you can enjoy being, where the body can really relax, where the mind can kind of enjoy itself. Now, that can take a little bit of finding and getting to, but it feels really important to say that. Not that you're all going to be in, you know, sort of eighth jhana all the time or anything like that. You might be, that'd be great, but come back sometimes, join us. But that it's this finding out how the pleasantness in the meditation can be found and seen and then just allowed and encouraged. And that it's okay to enjoy that. And it's actually more than okay, it's really skillful, because it's, again, encouraging us to find this sort of inner happiness and this inner contentment and inner enjoyment. It'd be very quiet. You know, that's also something we overlook, because it's not like great lights flashing and something dramatic. This can be very quiet, a sense of just feeling like okay. And I think we underestimate how great that is, you know, just to feel all right. And we're not running around the world and, you know, trying to do this, that and the other thing to feel better. And the last one is ekagata, which means unification. This kind of very, unified mind, that, you know, that the mind and the body, the whole thing is sort of together. And while we can't live all of our life that, it's something that is so healing for the mind when we can spend periods of time in that very gathered, centered. It feels like you sort of, on some unconscious level, things undo and let go. And it does a lot of the work of our healing and our liberation for us. So it's really worth kind of nourishing that. I've gone on a bit longer than I meant to, but I hope that at least sort of touches on those three areas of effort, and what right effort might be, mindfulness, what right mindfulness might be, and right concentration, particularly these five elements that I've just mentioned. And so I'd like to suggest we take a break now and open the door and give you a few minutes just to stretch your body, get some fresh air if you want, and then we'll come back and share a little bit more about this. So thank you for your attention. Thank you.